Hello and welcome to The Road to Net Zero, a podcast from the Advanced Propulsion Centre. My name is Clem Silverman, and for this episode, we're back in the recording booth at the APC's offices at the University of Warwick with Chris from our Technology Trends team to answer questions about lithium, what it's used for and where it comes from, and especially opportunities for extraction here in the UK. And just a quick note before we dive in, this was recorded in early February, but I've left the Valentine's Day joke in. Also, about halfway through, Chris makes a reference to the BGS, but mixes up his geography and geology societies when it should be stated as the British Geological Survey. Right, let's get to it. Welcome again to Chris Jones, Strategic Trends Manager here at the APC, and we're here to talk about the L word, lithium. Hello, Chris. You don't call it the L word, do you?
Thanks, Clem. No, just with Valentine's Day coming up, that's a bit scary.
Oh, yeah. We've covered lithium a few times on the podcast, including in the different battery chemistries and different lithium ion family of batteries. That's the nickel-rich NMC, nickel-manganese-cobalt, or lithium-iron-phosphate, or the LFP family of battery chemistries. And we've also learned that despite this being dominated by mining in four main countries, Australia, China, Zimbabwe, and Canada, we're now hearing about extractive opportunities here in the UK, some that we funded at the APC with scale-up and feasibility grants, as well as sites that are refining lithium here too, sort of bypassing the need for that Chinese-dominated supply chain. But, Chris, very, very simply, firstly and basically, what is lithium used for? Why is it so important?
Yeah, so lithium, in a lithium-ion battery, lithium is what carries the charge between the two electrodes. So that's how you store and remove, if you like, electricity. It's all about the movement of ions. And as the name suggests, the lithium ion battery relies on lithium.
And where does lithium, this critical mineral, come from? And who is producing it in large quantities today?
So there's a few ways you can actually get lithium out of the ground. So it's contained in a number of types of hard rock, including spodumene. And you might have heard, very hard to pronounce, lepidolite in China recently. They've kind of been shutting those mines down because the lithium content's a bit lower and not so much lithium's needed at the moment. The other way you can get lithium is from subterranean brines. So again, you've probably heard about evaporation of brine to give lithium in South America, and you have these very large brine fields where a lot of water is evaporated. So that's another way of getting lithium as well. It's not just from mined rock, but also from brines. And it's those brines that we have in the UK as well.
So when you say brines, that's where there is dissolved minerals within the water, and then you evaporate the water off and you're left with the minerals.
Yeah, exactly. So I think everyone in the UK, at least, will be familiar with the idea of a spa town. Now, spa towns are sat on mineral brines, traditionally, and those brines with salts in them are pumped to a spa and perhaps heated, or they might be geothermal brines that are already warm, and it's very nice to float around in the salty water because it's quite buoyant. That's a brine. And so what we're saying is that some of these brines contain lithium as well as other salts, and you can extract that useful salt.
Okay, brilliant. And are these different extraction techniques carbon intensive? Obviously, we are transitioning to a net zero economy. We're looking for zero emission technologies to drive our transport and drive our industry. So it's key that throughout the production process for all of these technologies, we have quite low carbon embedded within that. So what is there any difference between the different extraction techniques for lithium, which can make a difference in the end embedded carbon in the products that we use?
Yeah, so there's a lot of difference. There's a lot of difference depending on your method and depending on the location that you're mining and processing the material, which is why it's really important to look at localizing as much of this as we can. You know, we have a very clean grid here, so if we're processing our own lithium, that's reducing the carbon intensity of processing the lithium, and obviously it's a shorter journey to get to the gigafactories where the batteries are made. And then in terms of extraction, there's obviously different impacts depending on extraction methods. Now, it's not just carbon, right? So it's also how much water is used. Mm-hmm. I mentioned brine earlier, which kind of fairly obviously has quite a high water intensity if you're just evaporating that water off. There's also land usage. So mining takes up a certain amount of land. These brine fields can take up quite a lot of land. So this is where direct lithium extraction, which we're investing in the UK, and there's a lot of research and development here, is so important. So in terms of energy intensity, it's very competitive in terms of the amount of energy it uses. And importantly, where you've got a geothermal brine, you can produce your own electricity. Now, in the UK, when we're using direct lithium extraction, we can be using green energy. Now, interestingly, China use a lot of direct lithium extraction, but that's not green electricity necessarily. Mm. And so the impact can actually be higher in China than if they were to just use evaporative methods based on the energy intensity. Water usage with direct lithium extraction, a lot lower. You essentially can inject the water back into the ground, remove the salt you're interested in, and put everything else back where you found it. And land usage, you can have a very tiny, what we call a borehole, a very tiny hole in the ground. It goes quite deep, but in terms of land usage on the surface, it's a very small area that you need in order to extract the brine and get the lithium out. So that's where direct lithium extraction really offers a lot of benefits to reduce the impact of producing, extracting and processing lithium.
Sounds brilliant. So are there any downsides of that particular method?
I guess the one downside is it's still early days in a way in terms of this technique, which is why there's still a lot of development going on. And it can be, depending on, it's more to do with the brine than anything else in terms of how effectively you can get lithium out.
And will that vary from location to location?
Exactly.
So, you know, where, for example, today are the best locations in the UK to be extracting lithium?
Well, so the BGS, the British Geological Society, have a very useful map of where to expect lithium to be found in the UK. But based on what you'll have heard in the news, it's no surprise that Cornwall is one of the key locations to find these geothermal brines. There's also a significant amount in the northeast. It's all to do with geography. So it's about where you find certain geography. And to be honest, that's where the British Geographical Society are better at explaining this than I am.
Okay, brilliant. So there are opportunities in those areas. So what's needed from the wider automotive industry, because we're focusing on automotive, the APC, and its supply chain in the UK, where is the value added? So does the material stay in the locations and is processed in the locations where it's found, or does it get shipped around the country? You know, what happens to it afterwards?
So I think this is one of the keys, is looking at the supply chain and who is the customer at each point along that supply chain. I think this is probably one of the challenges for the industry at the moment. There would be an added cost at this point to a lower carbon lithium produced in the UK compared to a Chinese produced lithium. There would be. So the question is that cost to reduce your carbon footprint worthwhile? Will that be financially a good thing to do? Is there some incentive that might push the industry to do that? And then, you know, who are the gigafactories buying their lithium supply from, their cathode material, their electrolyte material, which has lithium in? And who are they further down the supply chain buying it from? So if you think you are the person wanting to extract lithium, you need to either process it yourself or sell it to a processor. So who is that? When you've processed that lithium, you now need to sell that to someone who's making electrolyte or cathode material. There is no one making cathode material in the UK right now. So who's your customer and where are they? Mm-hmm. And then that goes on and on up the supply chain.
Who are the major players in lithium? And is there a difference between who's extracting the material versus who's refining it and those supply and value chains?
Yeah, very much there is a difference. And I think the other difference is who owns what? because it's very well saying, half of mined lithium rock or lithium from rock is in Australia, but that doesn't mean that that's all Australian owned. Mm. So China own half the world's processing capacity. They can't fill that with their own domestic lithium. So they've been investing in lithium supply globally to bring to China and process it for export.
Is there such a thing as, like, with coffee or with wine, you can have different blends which have, 30% Arabica beans, 30% Robusta beans, or whatever it is. Can you do the same with lithium? So you can have 30% green lithium from sustainably sourced in the UK plus something else? Does it work like that?
Well, you could. So
can we see on our back, when we're buying a car, we can see on the battery, you can see the ingredients to where everything's produced, and you say, actually it's got 30% green, so that's better for the consumer. Or what is it? Does that exist in anything?
Yeah, I mean, when you look at recycled material content, it's the same thing. So the European battery passport requires you to state the amount of recycled material, lithium is one of them, that you have in there. There's no requirement to state the individual carbon footprint of different materials, but there is a requirement for the overall carbon footprint. Mm. So by having some percentage of green, if you want to call it that, lithium, you can reduce that carbon footprint of your overall battery.
Okay. So there is clearly a demand then for UK lithium. So what's stopping it from becoming scaled, because it's still a relatively niche industry at the moment, is that fair to say, or is it expanding rapidly as we speak, or what's stopping it becoming a boom town industry?
Yeah, so
especially in Cornwall, where you have historic mining activities, will it be the next tin mining for the area, that type of thing?
This is a really interesting question, because you look at this and you think to yourself, why isn't this booming, like right now, why isn't this just going? And I think part of it comes down to that who's your customer question, because you've got to have an offtake agreement to help you get investment. But I think there's some challenges to investment in this area. I think one thing is, when you talk to investors, you've kind of got a bit of a binary investment scenario, where you've got people that invest in mines who look at direct lithium extraction and go, oh, it's a bit of a new technology. I'm confident with mines and I'm confident with scale. And these are quite small projects compared to what I'm used to investing in with new technology. And so they're a bit nervous of investing. And then you've got the people that want to invest in green tech. And they go, oh, but it's mining and mining's dirty. So they don't want to invest in it either. So these companies that are doing, very innovative material extraction are struggling to find the right investment community to bring in on board. And then I think in the investment community, there is a perception of risk around these projects. And some of the issues, not unique to the UK, but some of the issues are around mineral rights. So in England and Wales, mineral ownership was separated from land ownership quite commonly. And so you can buy a piece of land knowing that there's minerals, but not necessarily the mineral rights. And you can do a load of due diligence, but still later on someone comes in with a claim that they own the minerals, and that is a risk, right? Mm-hmm. And there was a Mines Act in 1966 to try and rectify some of this, but it's quite a complicated process to get through. And so, there's risk and there's nervousness about that, I think. Now, the UK government has said they're committed to strengthen the capacity of the UK planning system, and they're introducing what they're calling a new premium planning service, as well as some planning reform. So there is something happening in the UK to help with the planning and permitting. And then the final challenge to all of this, so assuming you get your rights, you've got your planning and permitting, can you get people? And mining just isn't popular. Mm. Metallurgy isn't that popular anymore. So a lot of the skills that you require, there is a growing skills gap. Again, not unique to the UK. Other countries have highlighted this as a problem. But mining just isn't sexy. Mm. And the problem is that the energy transition needs us to extract material. And we want to innovate. We want to see innovation that reduces the impact of that extraction.
Maybe we do need to start talking about the L word then. Make it sexy
again. We've got to make it sexy again.
Yeah. Where are we towards meeting sort of that demand for lithium? That sort of, we're saying, what is it, 59 kilotons by 2030? What is next for the UK extractive sector?
So I think the really interesting thing, or the really cool thing, is that the potential for domestic supply is actually very closely matched to demand. So we could get very close to meeting our own demand with domestic supply. The thing is, 2030 is not that far away. Okay, so theoretically, you could get a geothermal brine running in a few years. But with those other things that we talked about, those timescales are a little bit longer. So the kind of question is, if we're serious about this, about having our own domestic supply, what are we going to do to accelerate that? And how are we going to help these companies find their customers so that they can get the investment that they need to accelerate their projects?
Where can people go to find more information through the APC, through the work that you do at the Technology Trends?
So they can come to the Advanced Propulsion Centre and talk to us. There's the Critical Minerals Intelligence Centre, which has a lot of information on this, and also the British Geological Society.
Brilliant. Thank you very much, Chris.
Right, thank you. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Chris, and thank you for listening to this episode of The Road to Net Zero. Don't forget to subscribe via your favourite podcast app and visit our website at abcuk.co.uk. And stay tuned for more insight from our Technology Trends team coming soon.